bangthebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 3rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5, hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes, however long we want to go here on this edition of Bang the Book Radio. We got one guest that joined me on the program here today. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We're going to hit over a dozen college football games with him. I'll hit some college football games after his segment with the games that we didn't get to throughout the week. Then we'll also take a look at a couple of NFL games with Brad to open up today's show. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff going on over there from our very talented cast of writers. Parker Michaels is back, 2-0 start to the NHL season, a daily must-read over at BangTheBook.com. Make sure you check out his thoughts here for this much bigger October 3rd card. Danny Vorgs has updated NFL power ratings with his model projected final scores went up here this morning, so you can check that out over at the website as well. We've got MLB playoff series previews. I've got Rays and Astros coming up here right after the show. We've got Braves Cardinals, which starts today. We've also got Nationals and Dodgers, and then, of course, Twins and Yankees. So all of the division series previewed over at the website. So some good thoughts in there for you to check out. My college football power ratings up for this week. We got a bunch of videos over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. A lot of stuff going on here at bangthebook.com right now across all of the sports markets that are out there. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. One guest here on the program today, but it is a very good one, professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
That's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. And, you know, hey, at least there's this. I mean, you know, I've been following the NHL. I'm more excited about the NHL season this year than I have been for a while, mostly because I've got baseball fatigue and, you know, football is what it is here at this time of the year. But, hey, at least you don't have to do the NHL. So, at least that doesn't get added to your ledger here for right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that probably October is probably the busiest sports month out of any month in a calendar year with, you know, and later in the month, you got NBA heating up. So, yeah, fun time. But also, I honestly think, I mean, look, we're all confined to 24 hours in a day. So it's a zero-sum game. So it's not like the sports books, you know, go hire a bunch of more staff. I would argue that sometimes October and November create some opportunities because just about everybody's spread thin.
Yeah, it's definitely part of it. And again, I mean, you know, you have so many sports markets in play. And of course, college basketball starting very early here this season as well. I think that's November 5th or something like that. So college basketball going to be coming up here as well.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where I think specialization. I mean, don't try to do too much. When you spread yourself thin and try to do every sport, I mean, maybe it works for you. Maybe it's high level, or maybe you have, you know, your own team of specialists. But I just think that's where specialization really helps you. Just continue to focus in on one sport. I get it. Most people can't, you know, aren't offered those opportunities. They got to cover it like yourself. But, you know, to me, if you want to win in the long term, that's where you zero in and focus in on and choose your one or two sports to focus in on.
Well, let's see if we can win here this weekend in college football. I know it's been kind of an up and down year for you a little bit on the college side. It's been an up and down year for me here too. It just sort of feels like, you know, and we kind of talked about this a little bit coming into the season where it felt like we had the elite teams, we had the bad teams, and it felt like a lot of the teams in the middle in most of these conferences were very interchangeable for the most part. And maybe that's what we're kind of seeing here with conference play going on. But we'll go ahead and start on Friday here. I think it's the game of the week, personally. I know Auburn and Florida play, but I think it's the best game on the card here. Game 307-308, UCF on the road to take on Cincinnati. What are your thoughts on this one here, Brad, to kick off the segment?
Yeah, I'm on Cincinnati here, and, you know, I'll start with my number. I mean, UCF I have by one in this instance, and I think just market-wide, I get it. The wise guys love Central Florida. Why? Because, I mean, their stats are really good. You know, yards per play differential, points per game differential, yards per game differential, all of it's elite. But I actually think, you know, the market probably threw Cincinnati in the trash too much for the Ohio State game. Look, a lot of wise guys liked Cincinnati against Ohio State. What happened? Ohio State 42-0. Well, since then, I mean, the Buckeyes have beaten Indiana by 41. They've beaten Miami of Ohio by 71. They've beaten Nebraska by 41. So to me, that data point that was really bad for Cincinnati doesn't look as bad now. And I really liked what I heard from Luke Fickell after the game last week, which I think got overlooked in the marketplace, shouldn't have. I mean, they went into Marshall and just hammered what I thought was a decent Marshall team. I mean, it was 45-0 entering the fourth quarter. That's a Marshall team that went onto the blue turf and lost by 7 earlier this season. And what Luke Fickell said, basically, he thought they were in a little bit of a rut. They were sitting there at 2-1. Didn't feel, you know, didn't have a lot of energy. And then he said after he walked into that locker room after the Marshall game, there's a different energy. I think it carries over here. I'm on the Bearcats.
Yeah, I like this thought process here. And maybe it is a little bit contrarian. I guess we'll kind of see, you know, where this line winds up going as we get closer to kickoff. But my number is UCF -2. So I'm right there with you with 3 and, you know, getting the push on 4. I'd love to get a 4.5. I don't think it's going to happen at this point in time, but I agree with you. I mean, I think Cincinnati's the right side in this game. And UCF is great. Statistically, they're awesome. But, you know, as much as people kind of look down on Cincinnati for that Ohio State game, not giving them enough credit for Marshall, doesn't it feel like UCF's getting too much credit for beating a really bad Stanford team? Like, just because they're a Power 5 team doesn't
yeah.
mean anything. It was a terrible spot for Stanford. Then UCF goes and loses to Pitt. Yeah, it was on a fourth quarter play, but I mean, Pitt was in that game the entire time pretty much and also had a first-half lead for most of that game. So, you know, I think UCF is probably a little bit overrated out there in the marketplace. I think Cincinnati is one of those right-side, really tough bets you sometimes have to make.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, because, look, I mean, with Central Florida's big play capability and speed on the outside, I mean, it is scary going up against Central Florida. But I'll say this, sometimes the hardest bets to make are the best bets to make. I mean, who in the world wants to bet, you know, the Miami Dolphins at this point on the NFL side? And, you know, yet, I mean, everyone's thinking that. Therefore, to me, I think you're buying on the cheap. Not saying Cincinnati's cheap by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, let's face it, this line was 4, looks like it's creeping to 3.5. So it's certainly not cheap, but it is scary to some degree, you know, stepping in front of Central Florida. But I think you hit the nail on the head. Stanford obviously has their worst team in a decade plus at this point. So Central Florida blowing out Stanford isn't the same as Central Florida blowing out Stanford in 2010, 2012, 2014, heck, even 2016 and 17.
All right, so we move to Friday's other game here, a game we haven't talked about a whole lot because, quite frankly, it's just not that attractive of a matchup. But, you know, hey, again, sometimes those are the best spots to find value here. Game 309-310, New Mexico and San Jose State. San Jose State, a 6.5-point favorite here. This line was 7, but this is a very rare roll for San Jose State.
Yeah, you're right on top of it. I mean, it's their largest favorite roll against an FBS opponent in about 4 years for them. So how do they handle it? I'll say this. I didn't think they'd handle success last week coming off that big win over Arkansas. I liked Air Force in that game, and I thought I had the right side in that one. But obviously one of the worst, you know, I guess they're all created. They're not all created equal, but, I mean, a bad beat's a bad beat. But it was something I haven't seen too often is a team, you know, in the final couple minutes when you're leading by 24 and you go for it on 4th and 1 at your own 22-yard line. I don't think I've seen that. So, you know, kudos San Jose State got the back door. Tough matchup here for me. I mean, my line says to take their slight value on the Spartans here, but I can't lay the 6.5. It's kind of a pass for me, Adam.
Yeah, it's a pass situation for me too. I mean, I've got a little bit of value on New Mexico. I got this line 4.5, but I'm not going to take either side here in this game. And I was also on Air Force last week, which was all sorts of fun. I really enjoyed that one. Then I was on Liberty. I was also on Vanderbilt. So it was a real fun weekend for me last week. And we kind of lamented that a little bit on Monday's show, just sort of openly asking. And I guess it's maybe a rhetorical question, but there are some weeks, you know, there are some Mondays where you just ask yourself, why the hell do I do this? And that was one of them last week.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, I was in the same boat. I had Liberty, and it wasn't even them giving up the back door. I knew they blew the game when they fumbled at the New Mexico four-yard line in the first half. They missed a chip shot field goal in the second half. I mean, I knew that one was coming, but what I didn't know was coming, you know, Khalil Tate's a late scratch for Arizona. Not announced, not on any injury report, but yet, you know, an hour before the game. Good night. But, yeah, I had similar thoughts. I mean, I'll even, since I don't want to get too much woe is me stuff, but, you know, try betting Nevada against Hawaii, and you turn on the TV and you see sleet and, you know, snowflakes, and you think you got a winner. You know, 3 hours later, it's 54-3 Hawaii when you had the late points with Nevada, and not a good Saturday for BP.
No, it was definitely a rough one. I mean, I had some good moments. I had some bad moments, and I was also on that Nevada game that you just mentioned. One that we talked about on the show last week that, you know, looked like a pretty good play. I mean, I guess the only thing that worked out for me last Saturday was I won dinner off of you with that Temple and Georgia Tech game.
Yeah, I like that. And I probably owe you 3-4 dinners at this point, so – you know, for those listening out there, you know, keep track of that. And whenever I step in front of Adam when these dinner bets, hasn't been a good look for me.
All right, so let's go to Saturday here. I don't know if we're going to have any games that wind up falling in the dinner bet category, but I guess we'll kind of wait and see here. Game 317-318, Texas and West Virginia. This is a line I thought was a little bit high. I'm not surprised to see it coming down now with the Longhorns laying double digits in Morgantown.
Yeah, I was expecting to bet Texas. I wanted to, but the line came a little higher than what I expected. I got it right around 9.5, 10 as far as the power rating goes for me. You know, both teams really banged up. I mean, Texas in the secondary really banged up. And then I thought maybe overlooked a little bit. West Virginia lost a couple of key guys at the line of scrimmage, one on the offensive line, one on the defensive line. You know, Sam Ellinger's looked the part this year, 15 touchdowns, one interception. The question I have, I mean, certainly Texas is going to be a little chippy coming off a bye. And if you remember last year's game, one of the best games of the year last year, and we didn't have too many great games last year, but, you know, West Virginia scores in the final seconds in Austin, the horns down by Will Greer and whatnot. But, you know, late in the game, you got to ask yourself, do you really want to be laying double digits when Texas has Oklahoma on deck? That's something that I'm not willing to do here. It's kind of a pass for me because I really want to take Texas, but again, I expected the number to come a little shorter than what it did.
I actually have this number a little bit higher than the market, but again, just looking at the spot and sort of factoring, you know, everything into the equation here, I thought that this number would be, you know, 9.5 or 10. And again, my peer power ratings that I post on Monday are just that. I mean, they're just the power ratings with home field advantage. As you start to apply situations like the difficulty of getting to Morgantown, the fact that Oklahoma's on deck, you know, all these different types of things makes it such a hard handicap. So a game I'll probably wind up staying off of, it'd be West Virginia or nothing for me, but still just a very challenging handicap for the reasons that you mentioned there, and especially the injuries. And I guess that's something to mention here real quickly. We're not going to talk about Purdue and Penn State, which is now up to 29 in some places, but do what you can to look at injury reports, man, because yeah. I adjusted Purdue 8 points. I'm still nowhere close to that line. But this is that time of the year. The injury attrition just adds up, and some of them are well documented when they're quarterbacks and, you know, NFL draft caliber dudes. Some of them are not well documented, so you've got to try and stay up on that as much as you can.
Absolutely, and you're looking for cluster injuries like in the secondary, at the line of scrimmage, offense or defensive line. I mean, that's what you're looking for. But I'll be honest, it's even tough with the quarterbacks. I mean, I hate to belabor it, but when Khalil Tate's, you know, one of the more important players in college football, is not on an injury report, and you know, an hour before kickoff, he's rolled out. I mean, I went pro standardization when it comes to college football injury reports after that one. And usually I'm a guy that loves injury reports because I think it rewards the people that are willing to dive deep and look at different, you know, sources for that stuff. But if it's not going to be on any source and it gets popped up late, I mean, what are we doing now in this industry? I think with more legalization, There needs to be, you know, obviously some more rules and regulations when it comes to reporting and stuff. I don't even care if everyone on the team is questionable and you do the Bill Belichick way. I know there'll be coaches that'll do it that way, but at least something, you know, questionable, doubtful, probable in college football would be nice.
Well, it's funny, too, because I even saw I don't remember exactly which team it was or which player it was, but one of the beat writers, you know, had asked and actually wrote about this on Twitter. You know, I had asked about a player, and the coach is like, well, I'm not going to tell you anything until I have to tell you something, and right now I don't have to tell you anything. And it's like, you know, I mean, come on. You know, especially not that the NCAA is really, you know, all that hell-bent on integrity fees or anything like that, but, you know, when you look around at how subjective officiating is, injury reports, you know, guy limited in practice all week, then all of a sudden a half hour before the game he winds up not playing. You know, I mean, it's obvious we have a bone to pick with all these sports for a variety of different reasons. But the injury thing, there's got to be some kind of standard. I totally agree with you, especially in college football when news can be really, really difficult to come by. So hopefully none of these games here have any of these pop-up injuries or anything like that. But we move on to game 325-326 here, a little primetime ACC game between Pitt and Duke. Duke, a five-point favorite here in this one. I don't know about you, Brad, but something feels off to me about this line.
Oh, I'll be interested to hear your take. I got it like 5.5. I know Pitt's kind of owned Duke, won and covered 4 straight over the Blue Devils here. Speaking of injuries, I mean, it didn't get covered too much because they're only playing Delaware, but that line didn't move considering Pitt sat half a dozen starters, including their quarterback last week. That'd have been nice to have a Delaware ticket getting about a 4-touchdown spread last week where Pitt, you know, struggled to win the game, forget covering. I like what I've seen from Duke. I think everyone's, at least coming in the season, was overreacting to the loss of Daniel Jones, and kudos, Daniel Jones looks good for the Giants. But Quentin Harris stepped in for Daniel Jones last year in a couple games, including a big win at Baylor. And Quentin Harris, for Duke, the quarterback, has played really well. I mean, in his last 3 games, he's completing about 77% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and about 300 rushing yards. That's 3 games. Tough for me to ignore series history, but I think the line looks about right to me. I got a pass. I put it at 5 in my newsletter.
Yeah, I mean, I got it Duke -6, but I really expected this line to be a little bit higher because I sort of expected Duke to have some inflation. I mean, keep in mind, Duke's only loss this year is Alabama. You know, they've played very well in 2 road games. They played extremely well against Virginia Tech in a game that, you know, everybody got a chance to see. They're on some extra rest here. I figured this line would be a little bit inflated, 6.5, 7 area. I think you're right. I think it's a good number at 5. I think it's tough to take either side here in this one. I think it probably goes up to 5.5 and maybe 6 as the public gets involved and looks back at Pitt and says, well, what happened against Delaware? Not realizing, like you just mentioned, that they sat a bunch of guys. So I do think this line goes up. If you like Pitt, I would wait. If you like Duke, maybe get it now. But I think this is one of those numbers. We've talked about this multiple times this season where I think it illustrates just how much sharper the odds makers are overall here. Because, again, I would have expected this number to be closer to a touchdown, and it's not.
Yeah, let's not give the odds makers too much credit. I think the market, I think, overall is a lot sharper than what it is. I mean, more people betting. I mean, to me, more money into the marketplace is going to, you know, the line should be theoretically a little bit sharper than what they used to be. But, yeah, I mean, it's tough to win. I mean, even when you think you have an advantage, it's tough to win. But you're right. I think if this was 15, 20 years ago, I think there would have been a clear overreaction to Pittsburgh only beating Delaware by 3. And obviously Duke coming off a 35-point win over Virginia Tech. Yeah, now I can see your point where you expected Duke to be laying 6, 6.5 here.
All right, so we moved out one spot here, game 327-328, Baylor and Kansas State. Could have had Baylor at 4 or 4.5 on the bet online openers. I'm pissed off I didn't take it because now we're down to Kansas State -1. 1.5 out there. There's also some 2 and 2.5s out there as well. So this was kind of all over the place, but still under the key number of 3.
Yeah, and I didn't have – I got Kansas State slightly favored by like 2, a little less than 2.5. So really no bet for me right now. But here's what I see. I mean, there was a major question mark with Baylor heading into last week. I mean, and the question mark was, how good is Baylor? Because let's face it, I could have made a strong case that they had played the weakest schedule of anybody in college football entering last week's game against Iowa State. And kudos, they responded, got out to a big early lead, took a couple punches from Iowa State, were able to rally, get a field goal. So big positive, big thumbs up for Baylor with that performance last week. Kansas State, do we really know how good Kansas State? I'm really impressed with the win at Mississippi State. But last week, I mean, the final looks respectable. They lost by 13 against Oklahoma State. But, Oklahoma State dominated that game. I mean, they dominated the line of scrimmage. They dominated the box score. Kansas State couldn't move the football. But they couldn't move the chains. They were 1 out of 13 on third downs. No bet for me. It's within a point of my line. It's not through a key number. This is one where I'm going to learn a lot about both teams and look to gain some value and some edges for future weeks, not necessarily this week.
I agree with learning a lot about both teams. I mean, I like Baylor last week. I wound up taking the 3. They win the game outright. And, that was a game, I believe Iowa State had all 21 of their points in the fourth quarter, right? So that was a game where Baylor played really well for the first three quarters, maybe kind of relaxed a little bit in the fourth quarter. You're curious to see how Kansas State bounces back, too, because – like you said, that game wasn't as close as the score. I mean, Oklahoma State ran for like 670 yards or something in that game. I'm exaggerating. It was in the 300 range, but still, I mean, they ran all over Kansas State in that one. So now you kind of want to see how Kansas State bounces back, how Klieman bounces back, and also Manhattan's a tough place to play. So you find out a lot about Baylor here too. Great game. Not much from a betting standpoint. I've got a Kansas State -1. So happy to see that one move down towards my number, but wish I would have grabbed Baylor getting more than 3 earlier on in the week. That was an oversight on my part. How about game 337-338 here, Virginia Tech and Miami. Miami a 14-point favorite here, Brad.
Yeah, I mean, my number's only got a 12, but I don't know if I have a handle on Virginia Tech, and I'm not sure the market has a handle on Virginia Tech at this point. I mean, you look at the Hokies, they're 0-4 against the number, but, I mean, you look at the combined spread margin of those 4 ATS losses, they've fallen short of expectations by a combined 81 points so far this year. I mean, if I can do my math, 81 divided by 4, that's about 20 points per game that Virginia Tech's fallen short. And, we heard the rumors of player mutiny at the end of last season. Bud Foster, this is it for him. I think this could be it for Justin Fuente, to be perfectly frank with you, if it continues. Miami comes in off a bye. They really struggle against Central Michigan. It was a very sloppy performance. But I'll say this, Jaren Williams, their new quarterback, still hasn't thrown an interception. I just can't trust VT. At 14, the line looks about right to me. I won't have a bet, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I mean, the Virginia Tech could be a team that is like almost like a Louisville last year where – this is a roster just giving up on their coach, and the market is just not going to catch up.
Yeah, that's the situation I think we're in. I've got Miami -15 here. So again, right by the number, grabbed an earlier number on one of the openers. I think I got 11.5. I bet online, open 12.5
in
Bookmaker.
I don't want it to get into a measuring contest here, but 8.5 I got at Circa.
I like it. Nice grab. That's a real good grab for you. Definitely props to you for that one. And that's the thing here is that losses will happen, but the degree of a loss is something you really have to look at in college football. And I dropped Virginia Tech, I think, 5 points after that game against Duke, because not only did they get their asses kicked, but they totally quit in that game. And I would rather be way too low on a team that I question its motivation then be in line with the market, or you'll be higher than the market, because I don't want to play Virginia Tech in any context right now. So if I can fade them, I'm going to happily do it. And I did it here this week, and I guess we'll see how it plays out.
I totally agree with that. And look for it depends. I mean, we talked about grabbing early numbers. I think that we'll see money continue to pour in against Virginia Tech if they don't at least look the part this week. I think the market will really start getting a hold of this early when it comes to, hey, we might have a team here that's just quit on their coach. And therefore, I think if you're wanting to fade Virginia Tech, do so, obviously, at the first chance you can do so early in the week.
All right, so we take a look here in the Pac-12 game, 343-344, and I don't know, maybe there's more clarity about the Arizona injury report this week, but Colorado's a four-point favorite here, up from three. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, there really isn't. There's not an official word of who they're going to go with at quarterback. I'll say this, Gunnell looked pretty good. I mean, he threw for 350 yards in the Arizona three-point win last week, so kudos there for Arizona. I mean, defensively, they certainly looked the part. And keep in mind, on the other side, you're dealing with a key injury with Colorado with Laviska Shenault. You know, they're all American wide receiver, although I'm starting to get to the point where he's overrated. He had a really good first five, six games a year ago, and then he got banged up, and he's been banged up a little bit this year. But I think it's a decent spot for Colorado coming off a bye. And if Arizona does end up going with Gunnell, it'd be his first road start. So slight lean for me would be on Colorado here.
I've got this line closer to a pick'em. Maybe I haven't adjusted enough enough for the injuries and things of that sort. But I will say this. I think the problem here is I don't know how to rate either one of these teams, because you've got a Colorado team that had some very misleading games early in the year. Then they got pretty much dominated by Air Force in a game that they lost in overtime. Arizona, with all the injury questions, I don't know what's going on with that team. I would go against my power ratings here and take Colorado, because the one thing that works out for Arizona's defense is they play that 3-3-5. And sometimes it's a little bit of a difficult scheme to kind of figure out on a regular week, because Arizona just doesn't have great talent on defense. If they did, they'd be a better defensive team. Colorado, with the extra time to decipher that defensive scheme, I think really helps them in this spot, because they can move the football. So I actually do like Colorado a little bit here, despite what my numbers would suggest.
Yeah, and I don't want to turn this into, I got this number at this, but the early money's been on Colorado, and I bet Colorado's just, playing on, hey, if Khalil Tate doesn't, more word's going to get out that maybe Khalil Tate is not going to play. And I'll say this, I think this line is telling us that Tate isn't going to play, because I think he's worth it. And the line move last week shows that he's worth three and a half points to the line. If he's in there, this line only goes down. Now that we're here on Thursday, I think this line is telling us that he's more likely not to play. And, on one hand, you got a Colorado team that's going to probably have to prepare for both. But if Tate doesn't play, I mean, Gunnell's not the same anywhere near the runner that Tate is. So that'd be another advantage schematically that Colorado has here.
Now, I did move Arizona down 4 points last week. So, maybe I haven't evaluated enough for Tate. Maybe I just don't, like I said, I just don't know how to rate Colorado. So I guess, that could be part of it too here.
On the Colorado side then for you.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know what? Like I said, I mean, coming off of a bye, Mel Tucker seems to have done a decent job with the defense. That offense, Montez can sling it. So like I said, I think Colorado may end up, I may like them enough to make them a nugget play this week, even though it's against my numbers. I just think the spot sets up really well for them, and also the ability to dive a little bit deeper into that Arizona defense, which, as we know, is very, very flawed here this season and really has been for multiple seasons. How about game 345-346 here? San Diego State and Colorado State. This line moves pretty interesting to me here. I'm curious to get your take on it.
It's moving with my power ranks. I have San Diego State by 8 here. I'm a little higher in the marketplace on San Diego State this year. I know the last time they played, you were on Utah State. Might have been a dinner bet I lost you. We'll have to track these, or maybe not, because instead of 2 dinner bets I owe you, I'll end up owing you 5, and then you'll just
we're just
going
to have to go to Bacchanal Buffet at Caesars, and I can just have multiple dinners in one.
There you go. That's a good call there. That's a deal right now. I'll buy out of the multiple and just say, well, I'll get you the buffet. It's one of my favorite buffets here in town. San Diego State's coming in off bye. They're terrible as a favorite. Last 11 times they've been a favorite, they're 1-10 against the number. So it's really tough laying, more than a touchdown now at this point with San Diego State. Now, I'll say this. It's been a very typical Rocky Long type of team this year. I mean, the under's 4-0 in San Diego State games, combined cover of 61.5 points in just 4 games. And I thought a little bit of misleading score, higher scoring for Colorado State and Utah State last week. Game had 3 non-offensive touchdowns. If I'm going to get involved here, Adam, I'm going to go with the under here, under 51, 51.5.
See, these are the types of games that I really hate in college football. You've got a San Diego State team that's 126th in the country in yards per play against the Colorado State team. It's top 25 in the country in yards per play. But as we know, Colorado State's defense is absolutely atrocious and San Diego State's defense is pretty good. And I hate these types of games where you've got a bad offense as a growing road favorite against a pretty good offense. You know, which side of the ball actually has success? You know, that I think it's such a hard handicap in games like this. My number was 6.5, so I was right on the open. But I hate games like this. I feel like I just naturally stay away from them when a bad offense has to create margin against an offense that's been pretty good.
That's a good call. I'll give myself a homework project. I'll have to look and see if I can query some of this up and see how it fares. But you're right. I mean, with such contrasting styles on the team, sometimes you find some of your best bets with contrasting styles. Otherwise, you're just like, I don't see how this works out, really. I don't have a strong opinion. So for me, that's why I'm going more under than anything.
All right, so we moved out one spot on the board here, 347, 348, Oregon State, UCLA. I was against Oregon State. I took Stanford -3. I got in on a good number for that one because it wound up pushing. Oregon State, 21 points in the fourth quarter of that game against Stanford. Again, says a lot about the current state of the Stanford program because from a box score standpoint, the Beavers were clearly the better team in that game.
Yeah, no question they were. Missed a couple of key field goals early. Moved the football. The interesting game, I mean, to say they were clearly better when they trailed 21-0 early in the game. It's an intriguing Oregon State team because I don't think a lot of people have seen them. And now you start – and I love this time of year because now you start reevaluating what's happened to this team throughout the course of the season. Well, a three-point loss, even though it was a little bit misleading, I'm remembering that box score, but three-point loss to Hawaii doesn't look so bad right now. They moved the football against Oklahoma State, lost right around the spread in that one. I chalk that up. Honestly, Jonathan Smith lost that game by going for two a couple of times as far as the cover. And now could have beaten Stanford, crushed and exceeded expectations against Cal. This is one where I love this. It's kind of like the, you know, we'll pull behind the curtain a little bit and how the sausage is made here. But I've talked myself into Oregon State throughout the course of the week. I just think this team is not getting enough. But I don't think a lot of people understand how good they are, or at least how improved they are over last season. I think this is a live dog here. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they go to the Rose Bowl and win the game outright.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either. What's the latest on DTR? Is he going to play?
The line says he isn't, at least at the current number. I mean, I think he's worth 3.5 points at least. I mean, you look at Burton last week was only 5 out of 9 for 48 yards. It's not like DTR's, you know, lit the world on fire so far this season, but he's shown flashes, specifically the game against Washington State in the last 20 minutes, but he's questionable right now. So, and I think this line right now it's saying he's more doubtful than questionable.
All right, so we got a listener request for this game early in the week. We got Ralph Michaels' opinion on it on Tuesday. We'll get your opinion on it here. Now, 353, 354, Tulsa and SMU. SMU 13 is pretty much the consensus number out there with them in a favorite role in the top 25 for the first time since 1986.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough cap because, I mean, Tulsa – I don't think it's getting a lot of publicity, but Tulsa's much improved this year. They're fresh off a bye. And to me, it's tough betting against SMU when a team's 5-0 against the number and they've covered by a combined 71 points so far. I mean, the game last week that got away from me, that it was square, but I just knew there was a good possibility. We talked about it on the show. I mean, SMU just looked the part against South Florida last week. And maybe just SMU's that good this year. And that's why something tells me that this is the week not to play on them because they've been getting pats on their back all week on campus for being ranked. But, you know, it's tough for me to go against a team that might be – I'm not going to put them in the same category as UCF, but maybe they are making kind of a UCF run from a couple years ago here. Maybe this is just a really good team with a lot of Power 5 transfers and everything's clicking for them this year.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I look at it, too. I mean, I'm a little scared to lay the 13. My number's 14.5 here. So not a ton of value, especially when you talk about double digit favorites like this. But look, this is another one of those games, though. If SMU covers the number, we talked about this last week with their game against South Florida. If SMU covers the number, in spite of all the noise, all the distraction, all the everything around this program, let's say they win this game by 4 touchdowns. I got to bump them up again and probably 3 to 4 points again. I mean, it's just, it's impressive what they're doing. And those are the things you want to look for out of the group of fives too, where sometimes they can get into these tough spots. And if they pass the test with flying colors, you've got to respect it.
No question. And the first test was passed last week, bumped them up. In fact, I bumped SMU up more than any team in the country so far this year. I got him up like 9.5 points so far from my preseason power rating. I got him as a top 40 team right now. And that's pretty strong considering, you know, my power rating is under an AP poll ballot. It's basically who would be favored over who. If they win the game by 4 touchdowns, this is a team that, you know, I'd have to start considering, you know, top 30-esque. And that's, you know, it's not easy in a half a season to go from like 75, 80 in my power rating to like top 30 in 6 games. But if they win and cover easily here, that will be the case with SMU.
All right, big game here at 355, 356, Iowa, Michigan. Michigan, 3.5-point favorite. Iowa's got some extra juice on that 3.5. A lot of minus 115s out there. So maybe we wind up getting all the way down to 3. I think if that happens, though, we'll get some immediate Michigan money.
Yeah, and it might be me making that bet as well. I got it at 6, and my numbers have been high on Iowa all year. I mean, I would argue that I've been almost, with the exception of the Iowa State game, my numbers have said back Iowa and back Iowa big in most of their games this year. But I think there's a lot of anti-Harbaugh in the marketplace right now, going back to the Wisconsin game. I'll say this, one thing that's probably getting overlooked, that they did bring down Josh Gattis from the booth. He was calling plays from the sideline, and it seemed to work, but it is Rutgers last week, so we'll see. I mean, this will be the test here. I'm not going to have a bet at the current line as far as the side, but to me, I mean, I'm surprised that, you know, and there's some money coming in on the over. It's up to like 48 in some spots. I mean, I just don't know how Michigan has success against Iowa's defense. They're very, I would say, sound fundamentally, Iowa. They haven't given up a running play longer than 19 yards this season. Michigan has only had one rush of 20 yards or longer this season, so I don't see Michigan having a lot of success. Flip side, I mean, this is by far the best. Well, I guess Iowa State is up there defensively, but I mean, let's face it, Iowa didn't set the world on fire in that game from an offensive aspect. I'm more on the under than anything here, Adam, under 48.
I'm happy to hear, though, that your number is 6, because I'm at 6.5, and, you know, I was really worried about just being too high on this game, but I don't want to completely dismiss Michigan. As much as it pains me to say that as an Ohio State fan, I don't want to completely dismiss the talent level on that team. Now, I don't have a whole lot of trust in Harbaugh to figure it out either, but there's a lot of talent on that football team, and Iowa – look, Iowa, it's the same thing we talked about with the Iowa State game. You can't make mistakes against Iowa. That's when Iowa beats, you know, teams that are comparable or better than them, because they don't make mistakes. So can Michigan force Stanley into a couple of mistakes and then take advantage? I think it's certainly possible here. So I may end up with a Michigan ticket at a reduced juice, 3.5. Would love to get a 3 at some kind of juice. But again, I mean, it's just one of those games that it feels like there's just too much of a reaction out there in the market to what we've seen so far. How about game 365, 366, a long trip for Air Force here out to the East Coast to take on Navy. Air Force, though, a 3.5-point road favorite in this one.
Yeah, and on the injury front, Malcolm Perry, Navy's quarterback's been upgraded to probable, although I'd say this line already had that baked into it. My number's Air Force 3.5. I've been high on Air Force this season. But if push came to shove, I'd probably prefer to take the hook here with the middies. Although, their offense was shut down in that second half against Memphis last week. This is going to probably sound square or not very sharp. Let's just put it that way. But, I mean, why not under? I mean, under 45. I mean, I looked and went through all the games, at least in the last 13 years. That's as far back as my database goes. the service academy games, Air Force, Navy, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Army. So 13 years. So we got 39 games sample size. The under is 31-8. 31-8 the under is in service academy games the last 13 years. I mean, I don't blindly bet on trends, but that one sounds pretty good to me, under 45.
I think my favorite thing is that this total, and maybe, you know, in the offshore market, it seems like it got corrected a little bit. I think Circa opened this total in the 50s, but it seemed like every time these service academies played each other, the total would come out too high and it would get bet down 4 or 5 points. It was like clockwork.
Yep.
So I guess we'll see here what happens in this one between the two service academies. But moving on, in the interest of time here, I want to try to tackle a few more of these games. TCU and Iowa State, game 373-374. This is a tough handicap because I don't think TCU is that great of a football team. Their quarterback play does not impress me at all, but their running game is great, and we all know about Gary Patterson's defense. Iowa State is a 3.5-point favorite here, three some places as well. This is a game I'm staying far, far away from, I think.
You know, I might talk myself into laying the 3 here, if that's where it comes down to. Yeah, TCU, I mean, it's looked dominant. I mean, they hammered Purdue, hammered Kansas last week. So at times they look dominant, but other times they haven't looked so good. And maybe SMU is just really that good. So that loss against SMU might not look as bad at the end of the season as what it does. I mean, TCU almost losing outright as a double-digit – or did lose outright almost as a double-digit favorite. Iowa State, give them credit for coming back. I mean, they could have folded the tents after they trailed 20-0 entering the fourth quarter. I think here, let's just talk it out loud. I think the coaches are about even here. I like both Matt Campbell and Gary Patterson. I'm at home with Iowa State, and I clearly have the better quarterback. Sometimes just the talk out, the simple, keep it simple, talk it out loud to me, and you got two good defenses, better quarterback play at home. 3 sounds cheap to me. My numbers have it more like 6. I like the Cyclones.
Yeah, I was wondering what your number is. I got it 4.5, so I guess you and I are kind of splitting the difference between where you are and where the market is here right now. So, yeah, I mean, my numbers would say, you know, maybe Iowa State. And that's the thing here, too. You know, TCU running the football on a lot of teams you can run the football on. Iowa State's a much tougher team to run the football on.
Yep.
And this is something that you have to look at this, too. You have to look at how these teams match up schematically. TCU wants to run the football. If they can't run the football, they probably can't score. And Iowa State can score multiple ways, even though they've had trouble scoring here this season. So yeah, it's very important to look at that stuff, too. And again, that's part of the handicapping process that we talk about, whereas the betting process, getting out in front of some of these numbers earlier on in the week. Love to get your take on this line move. 385, 386, Auburn and Florida. Most of the 3s out there are now gone. What do you think about that?
Tough handicap. I can't bet it at the current number. I got Auburn 1 here. Lean Florida, and Florida, I think, is about as healthy as they've been. I mean, outside of quarterback, but with Franks out, I mean, I'm not sure it's a huge negative at this point because he was so high variance. But C.J. Henderson, their cornerback, is back. Defensive end and Zuniga is back for Florida. They've been out the last couple of games, both of them. It just, for me, it's tough betting Florida because – I think there's a huge mismatch at the line of scrimmage. Their offensive line, Florida's, is their major question mark on their team. Auburn's defensive line on the other side of the ball is easily top 5 in the country. And that would worry me here. But I thought the 3 was a little pricey, and I think it might be because Auburn's 5-0 against the spread this season. The correct line movement, in my opinion, coming off the 3, but right now I don't really have a strong opinion.
I'm going to disagree with you here on this one, but with the 2.5, it's tough to make a dinner bet here. But Florida's 5-0, but they played the 91st ranked schedule in the country per Sagarin. Auburn's 5-0, and they've played the 5th ranked schedule. 3 top 30 teams already for Auburn. The only other teams to do that here this year are Stanford and BYU. So Auburn's played a very good schedule. Florida really hasn't. The only top 30 team for Florida was Miami in week 1. With the redshirt freshman quarterback, or week 0, I guess, with the redshirt freshman quarterback, Florida didn't look great in that game. I got to go with Auburn here at the 2.5, and this is one I may play now that it's off the key number of 3. My line's Auburn -4. Auburn's just – I think they're just a better team in every facet of the game. I really think that's the case, and it's a tough road spot for Bo Nix, and that was the worry at -3. But now that I'm getting the 2.5, I think I got to take Auburn here.
There you go. Here's what I'll say. No dinner bet. You know what? If you're confident enough, I'll take Florida +3 on a dinner bet.
All right, we can do that. So that means I got Auburn -3.
Key number.
Me,
I'm getting a half point advantage.
That's all fine. You take your half point, and I'll take another dinner somewhere. One more game on the college side. 391, 392, Michigan State and Ohio State. Don't need to spend a lot of time on this game, but I'm just curious to get your take because I know you were very high on Michigan State coming into the season. A lot of people were. And here they are getting almost 3 touchdowns against the Buckeyes. So what do you think about the current state of the Spartans and about this line?
I got a 21. But with that being said, I'd still lean Michigan State. I mean, it just seems off to me. But kudos for the Buckeyes. I mean, if my power ratings still have obviously some of last year still baked into it. I don't go full, as far as everything is about this season until, probably late October, where I take off that governor from past seasons. But, I've upgraded the Buckeyes well more than a touchdown so far this season. Michigan State's down a little bit, but I think this is the disrespected role that Michigan State usually thrives in. I'll lean with the Michigan State Spartans +20, but I don't say it with high confidence after I stepped in front of that Buckeye machine last week and took one on the chin and then some.
This is another one of those games. I mean, I get it. Ohio State's a 20-point favorite. I've got it at 18.5, by the way. But if Ohio State blows out Michigan State and does whatever they want against that defense, you got to move Ohio State up again because they're finally getting a legit defense. And if they still do whatever they want, I mean, that says a lot about this offense, about Ryan Day, about Justin Fields, about the offensive line. Everything just looks crisper for Ohio State on both sides of the ball here, especially on defense. Fundamentally sound, their tackling angles are better. Yeah, we'll see what happens when they play some, better athletes, but everything for the Buckeyes just looks better. And if they look the part here in this game, again, probably going to have to adjust them up a little bit. So a couple of NFL games I wanted to tackle here with you real quickly, Brad. 473, 474, Green Bay and Dallas. Game of the week, Dallas 3.5-point favorite. This line really hasn't moved a whole lot. Do you have a thought one way or another?
I'm on Green Bay. I just don't. I mean, they just played, we talk about strength of schedule. You don't get the disparities in the NFL too much, but I think we have one here. I mean, Green Bay has beat two legitimate teams, in my opinion, Chicago and Minnesota. And, last week they blew the lead against Philly, but, I mean, they really blew two scoring chances inside the Philly 10-yard line. If they somehow don't do that, stats say, they outgained the Eagles by 160 yards. I worry about Green Bay's defensive line, and they got run over last week, and now you're facing Zeke Elliott, so that's a concern. But, I mean, are we really sure how good Dallas is? I mean, they beat 3 patsies to start the season. Finally got some resistance last week, and, they lost outright as a favorite in the Superdome. So I'm on the hook here. I'll take the Packers +3.5.
And it's not like this. I mean, the Saints played really well defensively. You got to give them credit for that. It was one of my few good calls in the NFL last week. And something I thought really worked out for New Orleans is that most of their secondary played together at Ohio State. So with all the Dallas pre-snap motion, the confusion they try to create, I think the guys from Ohio State that played together were just, they're used to communicating like that. So I think it worked out really well for them. Maybe Dallas has more success this week against Green Bay without as much familiarity with each other in the secondary. But like you said, I mean, Dallas, they beat up on bums. And the Saints, as good as the defense played last week, that offense is a shell of itself with Teddy Bridgewater. And Dallas still couldn't beat them. So that's a big-time red flag right there.
And I got a much, much better quarterback here, Aaron Rodgers. He looked the part last week, even though they lost the game. Speaking of NFL, real quick, we didn't have a dinner bet on Kansas City, Detroit. Do you remember that one?
We did.
I think we did. The Chiefs.
Yeah,
all
I
right.
think we did.
Just making sure that we'll have to keep the record straight.
I don't even know what it is now. But what a shit show of an effort for Kansas City. I know they won the game, but man, that was disappointing.
Lost it.
Yeah, I know. They definitely should have lost it, and that's a pretty good segue here into this game against Indianapolis, where this lines up from 9.5 to 11 for Sunday Night Football, and I don't get it. I really, maybe you do. I don't get it.
I agree. I don't either. And look, I love Mahomes. I love Andy Reid. I really want Andy Reid to win a Super Bowl before he retires. I just think, you know he doesn't have one, but I think he's the second best coach in the NFL. I mean, I know there's a huge gap disparity between him and number one, but I don't get the double digits here. I mean, I think there's an overreaction to the Colts losing to the Raiders last week. And I just, how can you trust the Kansas City defense laying double digits? I don't, and I'm on the Colts here.
I mean, Kansas City can't stop anybody's running game. And as much as people hate on teams that establish the run here in the NFL, and I understand why, there are a few teams in the NFL that run the ball better than Indianapolis does. I mean, if you want to beat Kansas City, you keep it away from Pat Mahomes. I think the Colts can do that here in this spot. So that is a line move that I don't quite get too much. I guess I've already taken up enough of your time, so I'm going to ask you about this game anyway, since you are a guy with some Northeast Ohio ties. Any thoughts on Monday Night Football with the Browns getting 3.5 at San Francisco?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Very high variance the Browns have been. Something tells me, you know, the 49ers coming off a bye will be pretty good, and they should have covered their last game. I mean, they outgained Pittsburgh by 200 yards. Just turnovers were the issue. But turnovers have been the issue for San Fran pretty much since Kyle Shanahan got there. I'll say this, San Francisco's like 1-12, and I think a couple pushes in there as a home favorite the last 5 years. That hurts me. I think Cleveland found some things schematically that were really working for him last week against Baltimore. And I think I do respect Shanahan as an offensive play caller. I think he'll have some things dialed up. I like over more than anything.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, I'll keep it simple. I just talk about it each and every week. It's my newsletter. Right, game write-ups. Everything that I talk about is in the newsletter. Every single game in college, every single game in the NFL is in there. College is only hitting like 50% this season. It's been very uneven. But the pros continue to be successful. We're 6-0 the last couple of weeks. But don't buy it for the picks. Just buy it for the info. You get my power ranks, computer projected lines, trends, write-ups, you name it. It's all in there. You get it emailed to you weekly, each and every week through the Super Bowl. College and pro, $79, bradpowersports.com.
And then, of course, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Brad, appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much for joining me, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Take care, my friend.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brad Powers once again over at bradpowersports.com and at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. All right, so with the time left here on today's show, going to run through some of the college football games that we didn't get to on the segments here earlier on in the week. And one game we didn't really talk about too much, Georgia Southern and South Alabama. Game tonight, South Alabama down to a 10-point dog in that one. That line opened 13.5. So it's been very steady South Alabama money here over the course of the week. Some people kind of selling their stock a little bit in Georgia Southern. And, you know, to some degree, I understand the line move. I understand that Georgia Southern has been a disappointment here so far this season. But look at the teams they've played. You know, they play at LSU. Obviously, you're not going to do much with an LSU team that's, you know, much better than people thought coming into the year. They play at Minnesota. It was a game they lost by 3. Very easily could have won. Didn't have Shy Words, their quarterback. But they also got outgained by almost 200 yards in that game. So very misleading score based on some turnovers and things of that sort. Wirtz comes back against Louisiana. Georgia Southern outgained by almost 200 yards again. But Louisiana, really, really good team in the Sun Belt, one of the best rushing teams in the country. They're a lot better than people expected also. So I think Georgia Southern has just kind of run into a happenstance of occurrences here where they play LSU, who blows them out. LSU's better than we thought. Minnesota, you know, had some bad turnovers in that game, had some other weird things go on. But Minnesota, still, tough road game, Big Ten opponent, long trip from home. Louisiana last week at home, Louisiana's just a better team than we thought. Now you've got a Georgia Southern team. Yeah, I get it, you know, short week. But also for South Alabama here, you know, they've got to try and defend this gimmicky option offense. It's a short week for them. They have not played well the last 3 weeks. They've only scored, 26 points in their last 3 games. I think it's a tough spot to like South Alabama here. Again, I understand the line move. I understand why some people are down on Georgia Southern, but if you're going to give me a 10 flat here in this game, and even some 10s with reduced juice out there in the market now, I may have to look at Georgia Southern. even though my line is 9.5 here, I just think it's so tough to prep for that Georgia Southern scheme with such a quick turnaround like South Alabama has. As we look over at Saturday's card here, some interesting games early on the board. USF, a USF team that I think is just absolutely terrible. I think Charlie Strong is going to be fired from that job as well. They're a 10.5, 11-point favorite against UConn. Right on my number here, I have USF an 11-point favorite, and I'm happy about something like that because when it involves a team like UConn or a team like USF that's just outright terrible, I'm happy to be on the number because then I don't have to give that game too much of a second thought. However, when you look at South Florida here, when you look at this situation for them, you know, 1-3 on the season, and you look at the rest of their schedule, it's tough to find another win. They host BYU next week, at Navy the following week, at East Carolina the week after that. Maybe that's their best shot at another win. But then Temple, Cincinnati, Memphis, all at home, and then UCF on the road to finish out the year. They don't have many more cracks at a win. This is a game that they absolutely have to have. And for UConn here, again, every game is a tough one to try and get a win for them. Couple of blowout losses here. Did play well against Illinois in week two, but that was a game where, you know, when you really dig in and look at the box score for that one, you know, Illinois, both teams with three turnovers. UConn had 0.3 yards per carry rushing. Illinois is just not a very good team. So I think this is one where if you have to play it, maybe you're in some kind of contest pool where you have to pick every game or something like that, it would have to be USF for me just because there has to be this level of self-awareness that, look, boys, we may not win another game this year. And the coaches aren't going to say that, but the players are going to say that as they look at the schedule. And this is one of those instances, again, where if South Florida goes up to Stores and loses the game outright or doesn't play very well, you've got to lower South Florida again. Because situationally, this is as decent of a spot as they're going to get, especially in this big of a road favorite role. And if they don't play well, and if, you know, God forbid they lose the game outright, I'm going to have to lower them quite a bit. And I feel like I'm already pretty low on them anyway. So, again, even if these are games that you're not interested in betting, and there will be a lot of them over the course of the season, you know, consider the implications of what certain outcomes mean. You know, if a team is in a bad spot and wins big, that says a lot about them. If a team is in a bad spot and loses, maybe it doesn't say as much about them. But if a team is in a good spot and loses, that says a lot. So keep those things in mind here as you go throughout the rest of the season because, you know, we still have 8-9 weeks left of the regular season here. So we're still going to find out a lot about these teams as we go forward. And even these throwaway games can tell us a lot. Boston College and Louisville, game that we didn't really touch on here this week. My line's Louisville -4, the line in the market. 5, 5.5 out there, give or take. A lot of people down on Boston College here so far, and you can certainly understand why. It has not been a good look for Steve Adazio's team here so far this season, and yet they're 3-2. Louisville, the talent was there. They quit last year on Petrino. Seems like they're playing a little bit better here this season. Seems like they're playing with a little bit more oomph, a little bit more attitude with Scott Satterfield, but I think this is one of those spots where I'd be worried about Louisville going out there and covering a number. You know, there are two wins on the year, Eastern Kentucky, Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky is not a team that I've thought very highly of the last couple of years. They did hang in there quite well with Florida State last week, but, you know, you've got to learn how to win, and then you've got to learn how to cover. And I think Louisville has to relearn how to win after the damage that was done to that program last year. And, of course, the loss of a player like Lamar Jackson doesn't really help. But I think they have to learn how to get margin in a game like this. So I think I would lean Boston College here. If it gets up to 6, maybe I'll take a look at Boston College. If it got all the way to 6.5, I'd probably have to make a play on the Eagles here. But I think this is one of those spots where Louisville, they have to prove it to me. It's one thing to lose close and be competitive. It's another to go out there and cover a number in a favorite role against a team that, you know, by and large, if you look coming into the season, people would have said that Boston College would have been a road favorite here probably, or at the very least, the game would have been a pick 'em. So I think there's a little bit of overreaction in the marketplace within this line. So do like Boston College a little bit. Again, if it got to 6 or 6.5, I would certainly like it more. Game 315, 316 here, North Carolina and Georgia Tech. I've got North Carolina a 7-point favorite in this spot. The line's all the way up to 10.5 now. I think this is a tough situation for North Carolina. You're coming off of the near miss last week, going for 2 against Clemson, not getting it. You do have a Georgia Tech team that's in complete disarray right now. But when you look at that Georgia Tech box score from last week against Temple, the yardage was pretty close. I know Georgia Tech only scored 2 points, but the yardage was pretty close in that game. And again, I think North Carolina getting a lot of respect here for playing a bunch of single-digit games, all their games this season decided by 6 or fewer points. They're 2-3 on the year. They've had some fourth-quarter comebacks, some different types of things. I guess when you look at the injury situations for Georgia Tech here, down a wide receiver, down their center, so maybe need to make a point-and-a-half adjustment for some injuries for the Yellow Jackets here. So I guess my line probably a little bit light. But again, I think this is a tough spot for North Carolina. Can they go and blow out Georgia Tech? They absolutely can. Georgia Tech in that state of transition, changing everything on the offensive side. This could be a game that gets away from Georgia Tech very, very easily. But also, for North Carolina, what is their mindset? You know, how many times can you keep coming up to the plate and not just swing and miss a few times? You know, again, all 5 of their games decided by 6 or fewer points. That's a lot for a young team with a freshman quarterback, new head coach, new coordinators. That's a lot of emotion to put out here the first 5 weeks of the season. So maybe this isn't a spot to fade North Carolina just because Georgia Tech really is that bad. But as we go forward here for North Carolina, they do get a well-timed bye next week before going on the road to Blacksburg. But Duke, Virginia, Pitt, NC State the rest of the way. NC State game coming after playing Mercer. So a little bit of a bye before that game. But I think as we go forward here, we may find some spots to go against North Carolina. So maybe we root for North Carolina to win this game in lopsided fashion. But then you'll look for some opportunities to go against them as we go forward. Not a game I'll have any action on, but still an interesting handicap because you kind of look at it and say, well, I can only go North Carolina or nothing here. But as you start breaking down the context around the game for the Tar Heels, I think it's a very tough bet to make either way in that one. Purdue and Penn State, we touched on this game very quickly with Brad, just to simply look at the adjustments to this number. I mean, I've got Penn State a 21.5-point favorite here in this game in my power ratings, and I'm 7 points off from the market. So maybe I've underestimated what Penn State has done the last few weeks. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think maybe I've underestimated the injury impact for Purdue, even though I already moved them 8 points. So maybe this is a Purdue team that people just kind of expect to quit on the season a little bit. I know Nick Holt hasn't worked out as a defensive coordinator. The returns on Jeff Brohm are kind of hard to figure out with all the injuries, but I couldn't lay this big of a number with Penn State. I think Purdue has more pride than that. If I had to do something, again, if I was in a pool picking every game, Purdue +28, +28.5 would be the side. But again, one of the luxuries here of this business is that you don't have to bet on every game. And that's one that I think we just don't have to bet on. Maryland and Rutgers is a fascinating game here because you've got a Maryland team that was riding high after 2 weeks. They get that blowout of Syracuse and then reality really smacked them in the face. And then last week, you know, they canceled classes, a lot of fanfare for that game on Friday night in College Park, and they lose 59-0. Rutgers fires Chris Ash. And this was a bad team anyway. And if you had questions about Chris Ash coming into the season, you should have fired him back in January or even in December. Doing it now, I guess you don't want things to snowball any further, but also you're Rutgers. And look, if I'm the administration at Rutgers, I'm asking Paul Johnson if he wants to coach, or I'm trying to see if Willie Fritz will be my guy next year. I want to run some sort of gimmicky offense where I can maybe win 5, 6, or 7 games a year, kind of pull a Georgia Tech, you know, because they can't compete in the Big Ten. You know, they were a grab by the Big Ten to have some kind of presence out there in that New York, New Jersey market for basketball and for conference tournaments and whatever else. Rutgers needs to go get an option guy. They need to go out there and try something dramatically different. Go get Ivan Jasper from Navy or something like that. You know, run the option. Give yourself a chance to at least be competitive because right now you can't be competitive. And this game, I wouldn't touch this game with anybody's money. because I have no idea what to think about Rutgers, about what their mindset is. And also for Maryland, you know, you got some quarterback questions. You've got Mike Locksley questions now at this point in time too. Brutal game. I don't see an edge either way. Line coming down a little bit from 13. I get that with the skepticism about Maryland, but what an ugly game to try and figure out there in Piscataway this weekend. Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. Oklahoma State up to a 10-point favorite. And, you know, for Texas Tech, obviously I underestimated Alan Bowman and what his loss means to the Red Raiders. We'll see if they play a little bit better here this week. But Oklahoma State, dual-threat quarterback now in Spencer Sanders. Chuba Hubbard's running all over everybody. It's tough to like Texas Tech in this spot, but it's also tough to lay 10 with Oklahoma State. You know, coming off of such a big, resounding win, now they go on the road to Lubbock. A difficult game. I think there are a lot of difficult handicaps in college football this week. That's a game that I kind of looked at right away and sort of scratched off the page a little bit. And again, I probably didn't adjust enough for Bowman because my line's only 7 here. Bowman maybe more of a touchdown difference than the 4-point difference I originally gave it during the bye week. But still, this is a game I just don't have a whole lot of interest in. Eastern Michigan and Central Michigan. Michigan MAC trophy game here. 335, 336. Eastern Michigan, 6.5-point favorite in this one. My line on this game here, Eastern Michigan minus 7. So it is moving towards my number. And for Central Michigan here, it's very tough to get a read on this team. They had the quarterback injury to Quentin Dormady. Then they lose Jonathan Ward, their top running back. And you kind of wonder, okay, what happens to this team? First year with Jim McElwain, can they rally? Can they circle the wagons? And they played one hell of a game against Miami a couple of weeks ago. And you look at a game like that and you sort of ask yourself, okay, well, does that say more about Miami? Is Central Michigan just a little bit grittier than we thought? Or was that just a game that they really had a lot of interest and incentive in? I don't know. I think it's really tough to say. And then last week, did outgain Western Michigan. Now, of course, they were getting shut out through three quarters. Western Michigan kind of goes into a prevent a little bit. Jonathan Ward back has 100 yards on the ground. Central Michigan had 31 first downs in that game. They had 3 turnovers, so some bad turnover luck for them. Is this line too high now with Eastern Michigan? You know, for Eastern Michigan, coming off of a close game that they probably should have lost against Central Connecticut State, and then now you get Central Michigan, a team that's not going to roll over for you. So my line is 7 in this game, but I've kind of got to lean to the Central Michigan side. I think they may be better than we realize. You know, I think beating Akron by 21 was impressive for them. Going on the road and playing with Miami was impressive for them. Last week, the turnovers played a problem against Western Michigan. And again, yeah, maybe some cosmetic touches on the scoreboard late in that game. But you know, you look at their first 2 drives. They move the football to about midfield, get picked off. Western Michigan scores a touchdown, you're down 7-0. Move the football inside the Western Michigan 10, get stopped on downs. Western Michigan goes downfield, kicks a field goal. And it was just that kind of day. You know, they gave up. They had the fumble in the second half. They gave up a touchdown off of that. They were lucky that the pick didn't come back to burn them. But 14 Western Michigan points off of actual takeaways, another 3 points off of a turnover on downs. They move the football around halftime, turn it over on downs again. So for Central Michigan, I think they played better than that final score would indicate last week. Maybe like the chips a little bit here in this spot against Eastern Michigan, plus the 6.5 if you can find one. Again, looking to go against my numbers a little bit because I think Central Michigan may be a little bit better than I've given them credit for here so far. Troy in Missouri, 339, 340. Missouri, 24.5-point favorite here. This line was up in the 26 range earlier on in the week. I don't know what to think about this game. My line's 22, so maybe a little bit of line value on Troy earlier on in the week. I don't know what to think here because you've got a Troy team that does look to be down a little bit this season. And maybe it's because they don't have Neil Brown. It's probably because of some of their offensive losses. They give up 50 points last week to Arkansas State. Did score 43 of their own, but they've given up a lot of points here in 2 of their games against real opponents. Played Campbell and Akron in the other 2 games. Missouri has a reputation for beating up on teams like this. They have a reputation for going out there and dominating inferior competition. And you look here since that Wyoming game where they had some very unfortunate turnover luck, 38-7, 50-0, 34-14 against South Carolina. South Carolina team, I think, is pretty decent here this year. So as much as it pains me to say this, because I don't like laying big numbers, it would be Missouri or nothing for me here simply because this is what they do best. And Troy, I think, is down a little bit from where they've been the last couple of years. And they have this reputation of being a very solid Sun Belt team, and they could be when all said and done. But I think they're down just enough that Missouri can go out there, hang a big number, have some fun in this game before they get back into SEC play. 341-342 here, Liberty and New Mexico State. Really interesting game for a variety of different reasons. For the first one, these two teams played each other twice last year. Both independents, both set their own schedules, both play whoever will play them. They also play twice this year. So this is the game in Las Cruces on November 30th. They'll play over in Lynchburg, Virginia. So we'll have three data points by that November game of these two teams playing each other over the last 2 years. So that's kind of interesting. I guess it's a long travel spot for Liberty. I agree with this line moving down. It was 6 earlier in the week. I've got this line Liberty minus 2.5 on the road. So I agree with the line move coming down here. Maybe a lean to New Mexico State at the 5. But New Mexico State, I think it's a tough spot for them because they played their rival in New Mexico not that long ago, a couple of weeks ago. They've just had some weird travel, some weird situations here so far. So it's a game I'm going to stay away from, even though my line does suggest that New Mexico State may have a little bit of value. How about this Washington and Stanford game? Game 351-352. Do you remember when this was a premier must-watch type of game? And now Washington is a 17-point road favorite in Palo Alto. Biggest home underdog role in this series since 2004. It's the biggest home dog role for Stanford in over a decade. November 2008, when they played USC, was the biggest role. Biggest underdog role for them. So, yeah, you talk about maybe wanting to play against some outliers from time to time, but do you really want to take Stanford here? I was on Stanford last week, got lucky to escape with a push. It's not the same team. This is the worst team David Shaw's had in a very long time. And Washington is one of those tough teams because they've got great talent, but they're not flashy. You know, they don't play like a top 15 team. And that's how you wind up losing to teams like Cal. So I don't really know how to rate Washington here at this point in time. I only have this game 12.5, but obviously the line moving against me, the market likes Washington here in this one. So I'm not going to step in front of it. I'm not going to take Stanford in this spot. But again, you know, how the mighty have fallen with Stanford, biggest home dog role in over a decade for them here, in a game that used to be lined very, very closely. So, again, sometimes, and it can be tough, too. When you talk about adjusting your power ratings and things of that sort, when you've got a name brand team and they're just not very good, you try to dig in. You try to hold on a little bit and say, okay, well, I know the talent is still there. And then you wind up getting into a situation where I appear to be with this game where I just need to lower Stanford more. And maybe up Washington a point or two. But I just need to lower Stanford more. And that will happen. And it is one of the hard things of adjusting power ratings that you have a team with a reputation. You want to give them that credit, but maybe it's just not justified here for this season. Illinois and Minnesota. That's a game I played earlier on in the week. Caught Minnesota minus 13.5. My line on this game here is 17. And I think Minnesota is a team that you want to have on your radar. I think they're kind of figuring it out. And more importantly, I think Tanner Morgan is kind of figuring it out here this season for the Golden Gophers. Because one of my big worries about this team has always been offensive efficiency. The defense hasn't played that well this year, but offensive efficiency has been a concern. For Tanner Morgan, 10-2 touchdown interception ratio, 73% completion percentage. The running game hasn't been great. He's kind of overcome a pretty bad running game here. The offensive line hasn't played well for Minnesota. Morgan's been sacked 15 times on the year. But I don't think much of Illinois here. And I don't think much of a lot of things with Illinois. They got miserably outgained by New Mexico. They lost to Eastern Michigan. They struggled against UConn. And that win in week one against Akron, where they really dominated the game, just means nothing at this point in time. I know they're on some extra rest, but I took Minnesota here in this one. I got the 13.5 at 14. Again, obviously, you're giving up kind of a key number there. But I had to take Minnesota here this week. That is a game I do kind of like a little bit. If you find a 14 reduced juice or a 13.5, something like that. A couple more games I want to touch on here with you real quickly. Marshall and Middle Tennessee is an interesting game because Marshall was a touchdown favorite, now down into the 4 range. And we just talked about how good Cincinnati looked against Marshall last week. I'm looking around here. I don't see a whole lot of substantial injury issues for Marshall or anything like that. Certainly they do have some guys that are a little bit banged up here at this time of the year. But that's a pretty telling line move, especially early on in the week to the magnitude that it was. If there is a Marshall injury, I apologize. I haven't seen anything listed out there in any of the sources that I check out. But keep that in mind because, you know, there can be some injuries that are just a little bit more difficult to find than others. But that's a line move that really stood out to me early in the week, very sharp in nature. Again, could be injury related, but maybe people just thinking that Marshall's not that good of a team here this year, judging by what happened to them with Cincinnati last week. Finally, UTSA and UTEP. Not a great game by any means at all whatsoever. Down there toward the bottom of the board here, 8 o'clock kickoff in El Paso. But both of these teams at 1-3. And when you look at the chances for wins the rest of the way, few and far between. UTEP, 2 wins in their last 28 games. It's been a long time for the UTEP Miners that they've been a relevant college football program. And this is a spot for them. And I understand their only win this year against Houston Baptist, and quite frankly, they didn't play particularly well in that game. Actually, they did have 500 yards that game, but they gave up 413 yards to Houston Baptist. It was a close game late. This is a circle the wagons type of spot for UTEP, I think, because this is their best shot at a win the rest of the way. And for UTSA, it's probably their best shot at a win, too. So you should get a fully motivated effort from both of these teams. And we do see UTEP here get bet into a 1.5-point favorite. My line actually has UTSA -3 in this one, but the sharp money is on UTEP. There's no public investment or interest in that game at all whatsoever. I think those line moves are interesting. And I'm not going to take UTSA here, despite maybe a little bit of value on my numbers. It would be UTEP or nothing for me here because you've got to respect the line move like that in a game with that lack of magnitude. So to see UTEP a 1.5-point favorite here or two and a half point favorite is pretty telling. And I think that's the side that you would have to look at in that real barn burner of a game there. We got 2 items of business left for this week. My Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week 5. My picks for the Super Contest, and also some thoughts on the Circa Million. 10-10 here on the year in the Super Contest, 8-11-1 in the Circa Million. Hopefully some better fortunes here for me this weekend. But then also we'll chat with Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the Odds Report, looking at sharp money in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.